on this day after the midterms. I believe I've got some words of wisdom. Oh, and we're going to talk about the Gosnell movie.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast today. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. If you're watching, I'm smiling. My teeth aren't clenched today. Yesterday, I had just gotten a tooth pulled a few hours before the show, and could not open my jaws because I had to keep the gauze in place. But today, all is well. Those who had to put up with not perfectly pronounced syllables yesterday, just a couple of letters here, there were a little hard to pronounce after the tooth pull, but I think we're good. I think we're back to normal today. Thank you so much for joining the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Now, the second half of the broadcast today, so at the bottom of the hour, we are going to speak with one of the filmmakers behind the Kermit Gosnell movie. I don't want to say any more about that right now, except to say you want to call a friend and have them listen, watch, and if you miss it, make sure you catch the broadcast later online. All right. So there was not a blue wave, as many as were expecting. There was certainly not a red wave. There was, some say, a blue ripple. There are many on the left who are very upset with the election results. Many on the right who are very happy with the election results. Many others just saying all we are is more divided now than ever. The House of Representatives in the hands of the Democrats, the Senate, even more than it was before in the hands of the Republicans, governors shifting over the way of Democrat. What's going to happen? Each party, the rhetoric on each side seemingly getting deeper, more intense. And in the natural, just barring divine intervention, in the natural, what I would expect for the next 2 years is the ugliest continual news cycle we've ever seen. If you thought the Brett Kavanaugh hearings were intense, you could expect an atmosphere like that over the next 2 years almost incessantly. That's what you expect in the natural. Now, in a few minutes, I'm going to share with you on the air for the first time a letter I wrote this morning, and it's up already on the stream and elsewhere, an appeal to President Trump to help unify the nation. Yeah, with a clip we'll play from the president in a recent interview that may surprise you. But first, what I want to do is give you some reflections, biblically-based reflections, to help you on this day after the elections. Whether you're ecstatic about the results, upset with the results, whether you're grieved at the division in our nation, whether you're indifferent, I think these thoughts will be very helpful to you. And it's part of what I'm seeking to do. I'm not Rush Limbaugh. I'm not Sean Hannity. I'm obviously not Anderson Cooper or Jake Tapper. I'm not a secular broadcaster. This is not conservative talk radio. It's obviously not liberal talk radio. My goal is to be your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Let's listen to what Van Jones had to say as the elections were unfolding last night. Van Jones on CNN.
All right. No. It's heartbreaking. The hope has been that the antibodies would kick in, that this sort of infestation of hatred and division would draw a response from the American people, really in both parties, to say no and no more. That does not seem to be happening tonight. It's not a blue wave, but it's still a blue war. We've got to continue the fight forward. But I think that sense of helplessness that has really fueled a lot of this outrage and outpouring from Democrats may still be there tomorrow, even if we have the House.
All right, so what's fascinating is that the exact same words could be spoken on the conservative side, the red side. people feeling helpless, people being upset. That's one reason so many voted for Donald Trump. They felt the country's going in the wrong direction. Things are being taken out of our control. You've got the liberal elite steering things in a way that we don't like. We don't have a voice. Nobody fights for us. Hence, electing a fighter, a warrior like Donald Trump. That's what fueled the fire of many of his voters. Now, on the flip side, it's we don't like the way Trump has taken this country. The conservatives are trying to dominate and squeeze out everybody else who's not like them. We got to fight back. So everything's being increasingly polarized. May I offer you some biblical reflections? I posted these so that the articles would run the night before the election. So last night, as you're waiting for the midterm results to come in, but these reflections are helpful today. They'll be helpful a year from now. They're helpful in any situation. So even watching, listening around the world, if you're in the midst of a country in political turmoil, these principles are important for you. You can read this on the stream, stream.org. And guys, you can pull the article up if you haven't. Some biblical reflections while we wait for the election results. So number one, let's not lose our perspective. Let's not lose our perspective. Regardless of who's over the House and who's over the Senate, regardless of who's in the White House, God is still God. The Bible is still his word. And we are called to be disciples and make disciples. That's period. That doesn't change. Okay. As American Christians, we often get obsessed with politics. And we often put too much emphasis on these things. However, you think back to ancient Rome, where the believers had no political power. You had a crazed dictator who was often killing Christians. You had no political power. You had no vote. The gospel went forward. The gospel is going forward in many a country where believers have had no vote and no political voice or outlet. God's still God. God is still God. He remains enthroned in heaven. That is number one. Number two, exercising faith is very different than casting a vote. May I repeat that? Exercising faith is very different than casting a vote. I touched on this briefly yesterday. When I exercise faith, I'm doing it wholeheartedly without any hesitation, any reservation. I'm putting my 100% trust in the Savior. I am with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my mind, with all my strength, leaning on a perfect God who cannot fail and never will fail. When I cast a vote, I'm voting for an imperfect person. If I was voting for myself, I'd be voting for an imperfect person. Part of an imperfect party, which is part of an imperfect system. So my attitude to voting is very different than my attitude to faith. And having said that, my confidence in a person is going to be very different, especially a political leader, is very different than my confidence in God. And I want to be associated with my Savior in a way beyond anything in terms of the way I want to be associated with a person. I'm talking about a political leader. My endorsement for the Lord, in other words, you're my Savior, you're my Lord, you're my all in all. I look to you, I love you, I honor you. I will do anything for you. You have my life, my loyalty. That's different than my support of a candidate, all right? So exercising faith, very different than casting a vote. Number three, we're blessed to be American citizens, but we're even more blessed to be citizens of a heavenly kingdom. Let me say it again. We're blessed to be American citizens. I had on yesterday, the second half hour, Bridget Gabriel, author of the new book, Rise. She was from Lebanon. She was a victim of Islamic terror in Lebanon and survived that, but saw the horrors of life, has come to America and sees liberties we have that in many ways are unique in world history and certainly stand out in many ways to this day around the world. She doesn't want to take those for granted. I mentioned to Brigitte during the interview that while I was having my tooth pulled, there were a few different dental assistants in there, but one of them I was talking to, she's from Dominican Republic, and I said, so what do you miss about your home country? She said, oh, well, you know, I got most of my family there, and I said, what do you like best about America? She said, all these opportunities. You have opportunities you can't imagine compared to other parts of the world. She said her brother, you know, went to school, got a good degree and all that. She said, unless he has government connections, he can't get a job in his field. So we're blessed to be American citizens, but we're even more blessed to be citizens of a heavenly kingdom. And when push comes to shove, I realize that America is still part of the world. Got it? America is of the world. We are not of the world. We're in the world. So my ultimate sense of allegiance is first and foremost to the kingdom of God and to the heavenly country of which we're citizens, and then serving my country. I believe that as a loyal citizen to God's heavenly country, I can serve my earthly country even better. But I'll never get confused about what comes first, because I realize that America is still of the world, all right? Number four, to make America great, America must be good. It's simple, yes. To make America great, America must be good, and America can't be good without God, which means that ultimately our only hope is a massive revival and awakening. We vote, we get involved in the political process. As you'll see when we do the interview on the Gosnell movie in a few minutes, by all means, we speak out about abortion. We get involved in pro-life issues. We're holistic in terms of standing for justice and righteousness in our society. Absolutely. However, we understand that America cannot be great unless America is good. America cannot be good without God. Number five, again, you may be saying, I'm driving. I can't write all this down, or I'm at work kind of listening with one ear. Yeah, this is on stream.org. Stream.org, you can read this. Oh, and in a moment, I've got a very exciting announcement. We are so psyched at Ask Dr. Brown about this. I am really excited to share something with you. I'll do it momentarily. Number five, the key to America's future is in God's house, not the White House. Yeah, it's a trite saying, but look, we're the salt of the earth. If we lose our saltiness, the nation loses its conscience. We're the light of the world. But if we stop shining brightly, the nation stumbles in darkness. We have the ministry of reconciliation. But if we cannot unite as believers, if we can't be peacemakers, the nation will tear itself apart. We have the answer to life's deepest problems. But if we can't live by the wisdom of our own holy book, God's word, then our nation will lose its bearings. And number six, our passion for the Lord must be greater than our passion for politics. So if we prayed and shared the gospel and loved our neighbor and gave to God's work with the same passion that we talk about politics, America would be transformed. So it is important to vote in each election as much as we're able, but it's far more important that we love the Lord with all of our heart, soul, mind, strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. So as I conclude the article, that's why, while I continue to address moral and cultural political issues, I'm committed above all to being a gospel-based, Jesus-centered, spirit-empowered vehicle of awakening. Starts with you, starts with me. We'll be right back with my letter to the president and a striking soundbite from President Trump.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, welcome back to the Line of Fire. I mentioned a moment ago that we've got some really exciting news for you. How many of you have seen some of our Consider This videos? The first four viewed over 500,000 times on our YouTube channel, and then many times in other settings and venues. They're like the PragerU videos in that they're highly animated and just about 5 minutes long, so they're professionally done at the best level. So if you've seen one of them, folks say it's the best thing we've ever done, the best thing we've ever produced in our ministry. Well, we've got a brand new one out. We just posted it today. It's immediately getting great comments on YouTube. You can watch it on our YouTube channel, Ask Dr. Brown, or you can watch it at our Consider This site. So just go to askdrbrown.org/consider this. But it's called Why Don't More Pastors Speak Out? Why don't more pastors speak out? I just looked right before the show, and the positive comments pouring in on YouTube, the first 15, 20 people commenting as they're watching it. In the first few minutes, it's been up, and I'm just looking at thumbs up 109, thumbs down 1. So in other words, we struck a chord with a lot of people here, and it's a pretty intense video. It's pretty heavy. Why don't more pastors speak out on moral and cultural issues? Watch it. share it with a friend. All right. We've done the hard work. We've put the material together. Our amazing graphics team has put this video together. You'll hear my voice and see my face sharing these things with you. We've done the hard part. Now you get it out. Share it with as many people as you can. I think it's going to be a tremendous eye opener. So check it out. Why don't more pastors speak out? We deal with the main things that pastors and leaders would say, and then we give our response as a leader within the body. All right. President Trump recently did an exclusive interview, and he was asked about anything would change or any regret that he's had over these 2 years as president. What he had to say was really, really interesting, and it inspired me or played into my writing my latest article, which is an appeal to President Trump to help unify the nation. Let's listen to what he had to say. All right.
I would like to have a much softer tone. I feel to a certain extent I have no choice, but maybe I do, and maybe I could have been softer from that standpoint, but I want to get things done. But I would say if there's anything, I think tone would be perhaps something. I'm not sure that if I did that, maybe I'd be swamped, okay? You know, swamped meaning with the other side, because I wouldn't say their tone's been so nice either. But that would be something I would say that I'll be working on.
Uh-huh. So here's the deal. From his perspective, if he comes with a baseball bat and you come with a rifle, he's outarmed, right? So he's got to come with a bigger rifle. You come with a big rifle, he's going to come with a bazooka or whatever, you know, or a machine gun or something. So in his mind, if he moderates his tone, then he's going to get walked over. My take would be you can moderate your tone and still be a strong, decisive leader. You can moderate your tone and still fight for what's right. You can moderate your tone and be able to unify people that will come together. So this is the first time I'm going to share this now publicly. It's just been posted on different websites, an appeal to the president to help unify the nation. So I'm going to read this to the president. Of course, I copied him when I tweeted it, and it will go to people that he knows that are close to him, hopefully can get into his hands. In fact, I'm going to send it to someone who's access to people very close to his inner circle all the time. And some of you probably don't know the name of, but they've got great connections. So hopefully he'll read it. Let's pray that he will. So I'm going to read it to you. Are you ready? Dear Mr. President, in the aftermath of the midterm elections, we are officially a divided nation. It's the House versus the Senate, the left versus the right, the Trump haters versus the Trump lovers. War has been declared on every side, and no one is willing to compromise, understandably so. And looking at things through natural eyes, in other words, barring divine intervention, we are going to live in one continuous, ugly, even vile news cycle every day of the week right up until the 2020 elections. Surely this cannot be good for our nation. We will literally tear ourselves up. It will be the intensity of the Kavanaugh hearings multiplied and nonstop for the next 2 years. Families will divide over this. Longtime friendships will dissolve over this. Whole states will even talk about secession over this. To say it again, this cannot be good for our nation. Do I expect the media on either side to be more careful in their rhetoric? Do I expect CNN on the left or Fox on the right to moderate their tone? Certainly not. What about your political opponents? Will they moderate their tone now that they control the White House? No way. In reality, there's only one person in America who can help unify our broken nation, and that is you. To be clear, on my end as a committed evangelical, I would never compromise my pro-life, pro-family, pro-religious liberty, pro-Israel convictions. I don't expect those on the left to compromise their convictions either. In that sense, the ideological divide runs deep and will continue for decades to come, barring a national spiritual awakening. But tone can make a massive difference. The way we treat our enemies can speak volumes. The example you set, sir, will be followed by millions. Isn't that something to think about? Many of those who voted for you did so because they wanted a fighter. They wanted someone with backbone, someone who exposed the unethical tactics of many on the left, who would not be intimidated by the hostile media, who would face down world leaders without flinching. In that respect, you have not disappointed your base. And you have stood firmly for many of our most important values. In fact, your courage and tenacity and resolve have been outstanding. You've exceeded our expectations. Sadly, however, your style and tone have also alienated many good people. And I mean people who could have been a strong part of your base. You've made it difficult for many evangelicals to garner more support for your excellent programs. You've even opened yourself to the charge of being racist and misogynist, neither of which I believe to be true. Yet you have given unnecessary fuel to the fire of your critics. And when you get in the gutter to fight your battles, not only do you dirty yourself, you dirty the whole nation. You also lose your lofty vantage point as the most powerful elected man on the planet. I was encouraged to read your interview posted earlier this week in which you expressed regret for some of the tone you used during these last few years. You said, "I would like to have a much softer tone. I feel to a certain extent I have no choice, but maybe I do." With all respect, sir, you certainly do have a choice. You've come through the midterms very well, and you remain in the driver's seat. During his first midterms, President Obama lost 6 seats in the Senate. I have 83 here. I think it's 63 in the House and 6 in governor races. In contrast, you gained 3 seats in the Senate while losing only 34 in the House, along with 7 in governor races. The expected massive blue wave did not materialize. That means that on a strategic and political level, if you step higher, you'll expose just how low your opponents can go. This will only help you and the Republican Party in the 2020 elections. More importantly, on a holistic and national level, if you step higher, you will elevate all Americans. We can have deep differences without hating each other and despising each other and degrading each other and demeaning each other. Some indeed may get in the gutter, but everyone doesn't have to get dirty and soiled. One of my dearest friends and one of your most trusted evangelical advisors has urged you to be a father to the nation, just as you have been to your children who stand close by your side to this day. Other religious leaders who've met with you privately, including the rabbi of the synagogue in Pittsburgh, have commented on the side of you that the public doesn't see, the kinder, gentler, caring side. Why not show that side to the nation as well? How can that hurt? You can continue to be decisive, strong, unflinching, uncompromising, unwavering, and fearless. Those of us who voted for you want you to be, but you can do it with dignity as the President of the United States. Why not take tweeting to a new higher level? Why not set a new national trend? You were conciliatory and gracious when you won the presidential elections. That's what victors do. They know how to win graciously. Why not continue with the tone of the gracious victory as you pursue your agenda the next 2 years? If you'll do that, your base will only increase, and the national dialogue will be elevated. The cleaner you are, the dirtier those in the gutter will look. They'll be like those spitting into the wind. You, however, will stand on higher ground leading the nation. Isn't this the path to real victory? If you want to win, 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 this is the path to pursuit. So let's pray that the president will get this. Yeah, I'm not being silly when I believe it can get in his hands immediately. I absolutely believe that with connections that I have no connection directly to the president, but I have friends that have connections to people very close to the president. So certainly can get in his hands. Not a pipe dream to say that. And certainly it can encourage those advisors that are near to him to encourage him in the same direction. And at the very least, if he never sees it, and no one close to him ever sees it, what about us? What about our dialogue? What about our example? What about our integrity? What about our witness? What about the example we set before the world? Can we do better? Yes. Yes, we can. Come on, folks. Let's step higher. Let me say it again. You can be strong, unflinching, uncompromising, unwavering, without flinching, without backing down, without capitulating, without caving in. You can be all that without getting in the gutter and without appealing to people's basest sentiments. Come on, let's step higher. Let's set an example for the nation. Let's expose darkness by shining the light. That's how it works. All right, we'll be back with a very important interview. Don't go anywhere. Shake the nation, change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. The day after the midterm elections, one of the most important results is this, that Republicans control the Senate. And with their control of the Senate, that means they can continue to appoint pro-life justices. That means they can continue to do a good work in the federal courts and the Supreme Court. Well, there'll be a great battle in the House of Representatives, but that does not affect judges coming forward. What that means is that the pro-life movement can continue to take steps forward while we work on a grassroots level to change hearts and minds. And facts, statistics only go so far. The great impact is when it gets personal. The greatest impact is when it affects someone you know. The great impact is when you see or hear a story. And I have on the air with me now a man who's been involved in a very important work together with another Irish colleague, producing a book and a movie on a man who is known as America's most prolific serial killer. You said, what was that, Ted Bundy? Was that who? No. We're talking about the abortion doctor, Kermit Gosnell. I'm joined now by Phelim McAleer. Sir, did I pronounce your name roughly correctly?
Approximately. Good enough to do.
All right. Thank you, sir. Could you tell me what it is that prompted you to invest so much time, energy, and getting out a story that you knew from the start the left and the secular media would try to suppress?
Well, I mean, it's very nice to tell the truth, you know. It's very easy to tell it. People really appreciate the truth. There's real appetite for the truth. So I just think that this story should be told, and people need to know it. And the response we've had with the book has been a New York Times bestseller. The film has been playing the packed houses, you know, even though the media is trying to suppress it, no one would review it. It's a huge success.
Yeah, and it's a story that had to be told. Even during the Gosnell trial, the mainstream media just didn't cover it. It should have been a story that every American was familiar with. So we're indebted to you for helping get the message out. For those who don't know the story, who is Kermit Gosnell?
Well, he's an abortion doctor who is currently serving 3 life sentences in a prison in Pennsylvania. He, you know, his way of doing abortions, though, was that the babies would be born alive and he would kill them in a brutal fashion. Now, the movie doesn't show this. There's nothing gory in the movie. The movie is PG-13. The book goes into more detail, but, you know, he's America's biggest serial killer. He did this on trials for 30 years. I mean, until he was only caught because he was selling drugs. And when the DEA went in to his clinic with a drugs warrant, it was the first time anybody from officialdom had been in that abortion clinic for 17 years because a Republican governor had decided, had been elected governor of Pennsylvania as a moderate, Governor Tom Ridge. And he said, oh, no, that law that says abortion clinics have to be inspected every year, no, we're going to ignore that. So no one had been in that clinic for 17 years. Women died, babies died, people were mutilated. But he was just allowed to keep killing and killing.
Yeah, beyond shocking. So you mentioned women dying. Give an example. Are there specific names of people that we know died as a result of his abortion procedures?
Yeah, he was convicted of killing one, Karnemiah Munger, who was a Bhutanese rescue. You know, people say she's a classic Democrat victim. She's a woman of color. She's a refugee. She spent 20 years in a refugee camp in Bhutan and Nepal. She was in America 4 months. She arrived in Gosnell's abortion clinic, and she died. She was killed by him. He allowed unqualified staff to give her to dose her with anesthesia because it was cheaper. And, you know, she was in a sanctuary city, but she received no sanctuary in that sanctuary city. There was Tamika Shaw, a woman who died in Gosnell's clinic. Women were dying all the time, but no one wanted to investigate. No one wanted to look further. And no one would look further, only for a very smart cop who swallowed a pattern when he was in there on the drugs warrant, not on anything else.
Mm. And what about babies being born alive and then killed? I mean, obviously, there's a very fine line between a baby that can survive, that's healthy in pregnancy, terminating that baby's life in the womb. But it becomes even more grotesque when the baby is delivered alive and then is killed. This he did as well?
Yeah. He killed, at one stage, towards the end, he was doing tens of babies a night, dozens a week. You know, he's killed hundreds, if not thousands, of babies and people. He's America's most prolific serial killer, but he's the serial killer you've never heard of. And that's why we wanted to make this movie, because, you know, it is a crime story, and people have watched it as a crime story, but it also tells you a lot about America nowadays.
And does Dr. Gosnell, obviously we hate to even call him doctor, but he was, does he think that he's been wrongly charged, that somehow he was doing a good thing? Is he still under that delusion?
Absolutely. You can find, you know, go to gosnellmovie.com, you'll see the trailer, and he believes he did nothing wrong. He believes history will vindicate him. We talked to him in prison. History will vindicate him. He will be proven right, and he will be released from prison because he is innocent.
What do you make of that?
Well, you see, I mean, he was allowed to kill with semi-official sanctions for 30 years. And I suppose he's shocked that now they're telling him all those things. Because, you know, there's no secrets that people were dying there. People were getting reports of people dying there. You know, the bodies were literally carried out. I wouldn't say I have sympathy for him, but I have understanding for the actual shock that he has now that he's in prison for something. I mean, that one of the most chilling parts of the film, and this is based on actual verbatim testimony, is the prosecution, to try and prove that Gosnell was a bad doctor, produced a good doctor, a good abortion doctor, who said on the stand she'd done 40,000 abortions. Mm. The jury gasped when they heard that. But then, you know, the defense lawyer said, well, what happens if a baby's born alive? And eventually she was forced to admit they gave it comfort care. And when I asked what comfort care was, all these journalists, you see them going, what's comfort care? What's comfort care? She says, we put the baby aside, keep it warm, cover it with a blanket. Eventually it will pass. And the thing is, so it's perfectly legal for a baby to be born alive, and you put it aside and it'll die of dehydration and hunger. But it's illegal for a baby to be born alive and for you to stab it and kill it. One, the baby dies over a long period of time, dehydration and hunger, and the other, the baby dies instantly. One's murder and the other's not, and it's like, what is the real difference there is the question. That's something that really came out and something that it has never really been adequately addressed. We look at it in the film, and that's the jury had real problems with that, and that's part of the drama of the Gosnell movie.
Mm. Friends, gosnellmovie.com, just the trailer will pull you in. So the book being out, your co-author was on the show to talk about it some months back. Thankfully, no one was able to hold that back, and it becomes a New York Times bestseller. Now the movie comes out, and it's professionally done movie. It's opening in many, many theaters across America. It's doing very well. And it's doing well in theaters that are multiplexes, so it's got plenty of room. You've got 10 different theaters that you can go into, and yet you got immediate resistance to the movie. It was even removed from certain places that had plenty of room for it. It was one of the better viewed movies. So tell us what actually happened.
Well, I mean, the film. You mean. This is a major film. It's about a major story. It was crowdfunded, I'm sure, by many of your listeners. It was not reviewed by any of the mainstream media. We got 11 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes from the critics. Now we got 1,600 reviews from the public, and we got 98% positive reviews It's a world record for Rotten Tomatoes at the moment. We're the most popular movie in the country in Rotten Tomatoes. But the critics decided to try and boycott it to make sure that it wouldn't be covered, which echoes really what happened with the trial when the mainstream media refused to cover it also. So this is, you know, this is a pattern. They don't want this story out there because abortion does not come out well with this story, and that's part of their plan.
Yeah, and it has to be. I mean, surveys have been done for years of mainstream media and where their views are, just like Hollywood elite, extremely far left, much more so than the average American who's, you know, kind of close to the center on these issues. So, of course, something like this is just too intense. You've got to somehow silence it. But, of course, can't silence a movie. Everyone could watch it, get it. There's so many ways to get into people's hands. And I don't have the name in front of me, but I was looking at a column the other day where someone said seeing the movie has completely changed their views on abortion. Have you heard that from readers of the book or viewers of the movie?
If you go on Twitter, you'll see it. If you go on our website, even Google it. Yeah, there was a student from Florida said it changed her view on abortion. A guy, Patrick Curlish, a social media entrepreneur, said it completely flipped him from pro-choice to pro-life. We've heard from lots of people, lots and lots of people. And that's why the media fear this story. That's why the media fear this movie. And that's why they're not agreeing. That's why there's a cover-up.
All right. If it's still not in theaters nearby some of our listeners and viewers, where do people go? How can they view Gosnell, the movie?
Go to gosnellmovie.com and you'll see it in theaters near you. You know, if it's in theaters near you. And if it's not, get your local theater to run it because the theaters do respond to local pressure. If people will phone them up and ask them to bring it. 2 or 3 phone calls, it's quite surprising.
Really? So, friends, did you hear that? Go to gosnellmovie.com. If, when you click on theater near you, if your local theater is not listed, call and get a few of your friends, right? Just organize it. Get 4 or 5 of your friends. On social media, you can get hundreds, right? And say, hey, let's call our local theater and ask for this to be shown. And then eventually be out on DVD, et cetera, correct?
Yeah. It'll be on video on demand in January and then DVD in February.
Awesome. All right, friends.
But at the moment, we need people to go to the theaters to see it.
Okay.
Some people are going online to buy tickets just to support the film, even if it's not in a theater near them.
All right, friends. They've done the hard work. They've done an extraordinary work. Now let's do it. You hear that? We've got to get it in more theaters. GosnellMovie.com. Thank you, sir, for all you've done and all you're doing. Much appreciated.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, that's all the time we had with Phelim McAleer. Again, hopefully close to the right pronunciation of his name. Irish filmmaker and author. So together with his co-worker, they put out the Gosnell book and the Gosnell movie. So go to gosnellmovie.com. I myself have not seen the movie yet. Eager to, scared to, in terms of, you know, things are so intense to have to see the realities. But like you said, it's not a gory movie. It just tells the true story, as dramatic and shocking as it is. Of yes, to our knowledge, America's most prolific serial killer, Kermit Gosnell. So go to gosnellmovie.com. Check to see if it's showing at a theater near you. If so, go there and support it. If not, call the theater and say, hey, I really want to see this movie. And then thank them for considering it. And then have a few other friends call. You know, it doesn't have to be within the same 5 minutes. Let it be over the course of a day. And hopefully the theater will respond. We need to get it out to the maximum audience. It's a critically important issue. So here we are the day after the midterms. Already the sparring has begun. I wrote an article this morning, which is now up on the stream. We'll be going up on other websites shortly. An appeal to President Trump to help unify the nation. It's not an appeal to compromise. It's in fact an exhortation not to. It's not an appeal to be soft. In fact, it's an exhortation to be strong. But there's a way to do things. There is a strength that does not get in the gutter. There is an uncompromising, unflinching position where the uglier the opposition gets, you go higher. Look, Michelle Obama had famously said at a rally not that long ago, when they go low, we go high. Eric Holder, unfortunately, responded with, when they go low, we kick them. Michelle Obama's encouraged people, well, the opposition goes low, you go high. That's an admirable thing to do, and that's what I'm encouraging the president to do as well. And you can do that and be a strong leader. You can do that and be unshakable. You can do that and be bold. You can do that and be a fighter. There's a way to do it without getting in the gutter. Here, let me give you an example. As a parent, when your 7-year-old child acts up and starts having some kind of tantrum, and they, you don't love me, you're not a good mama, you're a mean person, do you start to cry and say, well, you're a mean person, you're even meaner than I am? No, as the mother, as the father, you maintain your control because you're the parent, right? You maintain your control and you say, this is the way it is. You're wrong and you're going to have to stop crying and you're not going to get your way. This is the way it is because I'm the mommy, I'm the dad, right? So you're strong, you're forceful, you're uncompromising, but you don't get down to your child's tantrum level. I'm saying the same thing. Now, I'm not saying the president is the parent and opponents are the children, or opponents of the media are the children. All I'm saying is you can be strong without being a baby. You can be strong without being nasty. You can be strong without being insulting. Well, I like the insults. Maybe you do. Maybe you enjoy. Oh, okay, you know, the Pocahontas thing, you know, the false Pocahontas, you know, or Elizabeth Warren, when President Trump said, I've got to apologize, you know, for calling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, I've got to apologize to Pocahontas. Okay, that's funny, right? He's had some other lines, the way he's characterized certain people, you know, in low energy, Jeb Bush. And yeah, if you didn't like these, yeah, that's funny. He's a master at naming people and, you know, and Psycho Joe and these different things. And but can I ask you a question? Could he get the job done just as effectively? Remember, I voted for him. Remember, I get blasted as a supporter of Donald Trump all the time, okay? Just think, he could be just as forceful and expose fake news without getting in the gutter doing it. And see, here's the thing. Let's say, on the House side, the Democrats follow what would probably be a politically suicidal strategy and try to impeach the president. Questions for what? Crimes, what impeachable crimes, but try to impeach him. And then we're going to open up the Kavanaugh hearings again. We're going to investigate, we're going to impeach Justice Kavanaugh. And although, by the way, a report over 400 pages found zero evidence that Kavanaugh was guilty of the things he was accused of. And actually had one man come forward and say that he did happen to look like Kavanaugh. Saw the picture of Christine Blasey Ford, and looking back, you know, remembering things, he said he thinks he was the one involved because he says the exact same thing happened. She was dressed the same way, and it was in a house in that same area, and his friend jumped on the bed just playfully to stop the whole thing, and it fit exactly her description. So someone's actually come forward and said, I think I was the guy that did that. In any case, if the House decided to pursue a politically suicidal course, in all likelihood. In other words, it would destroy Democrat chances for 2020 in many ways. If they decided to do that, and every day they're blasting him, and every day they're accusing him, and every day they're attacking him, first, if he ignores most of it, then a lot of it doesn't get the attention it normally gets, because he is the news cycle. If he talks about something, he is the news cycle. CNN has admitted, you take Trump out, our viewership goes boom, way down. So even the people just feeding on the constant attacks on Trump, that's they want to hear about. But secondly, if you just respond with facts and move on, I've said this for many years. If the devil, so to say, and I'm not calling the Democrats the devil, Republicans the saints, okay here, but I've said for years, if the devil wants to wrestle with me in the mud, I'll leave him there. I'll leave him there. In other words, let's say you're You're just going about your business and suddenly some ridiculous thought, ugly thought, unclean thought, stupid thought, vile thought pops in your mind. It's like, where did that come from? Wherever it came from, it's not who I am. It's not part of me. I'm moving forward. I'm going to leave it there. All right. Whoever that thought came from, either my flesh, which I've died to in Jesus' name, or some demonic suggestion, that's gutter. That's not me. The real me is the one that loves God and wants to serve God. So I'll say no to other parts of me that do not reflect that. And I'll certainly say no to outside accusations and thoughts. So what I'm saying is, here, look, I'm not the president, okay? We understand that, okay? But I could take you to a page I have, a file, where you would see one after another, the most vile, ugly attacks on me imaginable. Every so often, for fun, we'll share them and then even respond every so often. And, you know, I feel bad for the people attacking. I often pray for God's grace on their lives. But, you know, I get people, this is the last few days, wanting to hire an assassin or wishing I'd burned to death. Or just ugly, ridiculous stuff. Why would you burn? I'm going to assassin on you. No, obviously not. You'd be appalled and mortified if I did that. And look, you ever see a football game, NFL game, and you know what happens, okay? So I'm an offensive lineman. I'm a tackle, right? Big guy, you know, 6'4", 330 pounds. And I'm there to block the quarterback, and you hit the quarterback with a cheap shot after the play is over, right? And the ref doesn't see that cheap shot. And I come over and I shove you. What happens? I get the penalty flag because the guy that goes last is normally the guy that gets caught, okay? So the thing is that cheap shot, you walk away from it, you win the game. You don't get penalized because maybe you got penalized and you just hurt your team. So I am not expecting the ones on the radical left to change their views. I'm not expecting radical feminists to change their views. I'm not expecting pro-abortion zealots to change their views. I'm not expecting anti-Israel crowd to change their... I'm not expecting that. We try to influence one at a time, or as many as we can, but I'm not expecting any of that. But I am expecting that there are those in the middle, there are those who lean right, there are those who lean left a little, and there are a lot of things the president does they like, but there are other things he does and other things about him that are so grievous, offensive, at times repulsive, that they can't stand with him. And what I'm saying is, let's elevate the conversation, starting with you and me. Hopefully I set an example of that with the articles I write and the voice that we have on TV and radio and internet. That's certainly a goal, to be a model. But let's do what we can to elevate the conversation. And then, look, I'm absolutely to the core pro-life, and absolutely to the core pro-family, and absolutely to the core pro-religious liberty, and absolutely to the core pro-Israel. I'm not changing any of these views. I'm not moving to the center. No, I'm holding what I believe is right. And I know the left is going to do the same, unless there's a massive spiritual awakening. However, if the president used a different tone, held his ground, stood for what he stood for, he'd offend less people. And I'm talking about the ones he can win. At least he could bring them on his side. And then there would be a call for more civility. It could ripple out. And we could have our deep differences. But just like you do with a family or coworker, you sit down face to face, you have your meal, you say, hey, I really disagree with you, but we work together. So see what we can do here. All right, friends. If you have not yet seen our latest video, go to our YouTube channel, Ask Dr. Brown, ASK Dr. Brown on YouTube, and watch our latest Consider This video. It's called Why Don't More Pastors Speak Out? You want to see this. It's 5 minutes long. It's our best animated video we have ever put out. I guarantee you, you're going to enjoy it and want to share it with as many people as possible. So go there now, Ask Dr. Brown, ASK Dr. Brown, and watch Consider This. Why don't more pastors speak out? Yeah, pretty intense stuff. Be back with you on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday tomorrow.